Hey, listeners, have you ever had patients give you an earful for using plastic pill bottles? Introducing Parcel Health's PhilBox. The PhilBox is fully biodegradable, water-resistant, and user-friendly eco-packaging for pharmacies. As pharmacists, we know containers aren't just containers. They're protectors of meds and displayers of med info. But they also are your pharmacy's daily mini billboard in a patient's home in their hands. So check out the PhilBox, see how it can fulfill your sustainability and marketing goals. Visit parcelhealth.co today and enter the keyword BizFarm with a Z for 10% off your order. You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Alex, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name's Alex Evans. I'm a pharmacist. I'm doing medical writing kind of as a freelancer now. And with ChatGPT kind of being the big AI that got attention earlier this year, I started seeing how it could be used. Does it work well? How can you get better output out of it? Things of that nature. So today we're going to talk about the impacts of AI on medical communications.
All right, Alex, you're living in Japan now. And I've got to ask, is that just like some marketing thing to say that you can go wherever you want to in the world with your writing? And so you said, I'll go to Japan to really make an impact to see how far away I can go from the States.
Not quite like that.
What's going on? What brings you to Japan?
I guess, first of all, Japan's immigration's too tough to be able to do that. I don't think you can get that a visa that easily here. Right now, I'm about 20 or 30 minutes away from where my wife grew up. We were living in Jacksonville, Florida before this. I was there for 6 years, and due to COVID and just expense and distance and things, it had actually been 4.5 years since her family had seen my son. So we moved last summer. At that point, my son was 5.5, and his family here had seen him once. For about a week. My wife stayed longer, so about a month at that time. So it had been a very long time. He didn't speak Japanese. He didn't know who they were. So we initially planned on staying for 2 years just to catch up on family time and just do the medical writing from here. And I kind of realized pretty soon after getting here, I wanted to stay. Yeah, it's a great environment for my son. I mean, I certainly like living here. So we're settled now.
Where did you meet your wife?
In Hawaii.
And she's Japanese?
Yeah.
For your writing, does it matter a hoot where you are, or does it matter not at all?
And for work, for the most part, it doesn't matter. Now, of course, doing a podcast like this in the morning here. And so for those podcasts, of course, you have to work out a good time for him. But other than that, the writing, actual writing of articles or even writing CE and things of that nature, it doesn't generally matter. I mean, you have a deadline and you have to meet the deadline.
And you're emailing back and forth and stuff.
Yeah, and I can't imagine. I mean, I've never had an editor expect a response in 2 hours. You got to email them back.
How about any pharmacy stuff in Japan? Have you got your feet wet as far as any local pharmacy scene in the nation or anything? Or haven't you really delved into that too much? I don't know what I'm asking, but you know, like any association or anything like that?
Yeah, not yet, just because I've still been focusing on the medical writing, but I have certainly been interested in looking at the Japan Pharmaceutical Association. And yeah, I actually need to contact them. They require a license number in order to be able to register. So I have to be able to tell them I'm a little bit of an exception here. Is it okay if I join anyway, hang out with y'all anyway? Other than that, and I have looked at becoming a pharmacist here, it's a very long process. First of all, improving language proficiency at a level that I do not have yet. I really practice pharmacy when patient safety is at risk. But I think at least with joining the Pharmacy Association, kind of stay involved and see what's happening in the country and maybe bring some ideas back and forth between Japan and the U.S.
Alex, the first time you see ChatGPT, a year ago, let's say, what's your first thought in the first 15 minutes of pulling this thing up and playing with it?
Oh, man, I was blown away. I remember the first prop I ever put in was, what is heart failure? And I posted on LinkedIn because I just couldn't believe what it came up with. I mean, just 3-4 paragraphs, it started writing about pathophysiology and major drug classes for heart failure and outcomes. I don't remember what it was producing, but I was blown away with it. And of course, anytime you have a technology that's that disruptive to so many things, there's going to be a lot of people that are in denial about how it's going to affect their job. So I've had a lot of medical writers push back and say, I'm not using AI. It's not accurate. Prefer the human touch, things of that nature. But I'll also say I've had kind of private messages back and forth with folks who work for drug companies and they work for medical communications firms. They're developing their own private tools and already using them. So it's just moving fast. And there's a lot of people still seem to be under the impression that using AI means that you would submit a first draft or you'd submit a unedited output or that things would slip through the cracks. You have to fact check it. You have to adjust the style for the website or journal, whatever. Consumer health, even provider education, like it will crank some stuff out. Intros and conclusions can be pretty much boilerplate with especially web articles, even magazine articles. It'll just crank those out. You do some light editing. I mean, they save. I can write in half the time. And the other thing is that you end up often writing things that are more comprehensive in nature. It'll start writing things that you didn't think of. The side effect of a medication, if it's nausea, it'll start going into self-management tips for nausea.
Alex, playing devil's advocate, this comes out and Alex says, well, there goes my customers because they're all going to use this.
I think a lot of medical writers are afraid of that. Not that it hasn't crossed my mind. I just don't see that necessarily that companies would go with a raw output, unedited.
That's a good point.
Actually publish that and put themselves at that kind of risk. And I'll also say for anybody who follows like search engine optimization websites and things of that nature, which is a part of a lot of medical writing, Google has put out a lot of updates recently and has started to focus a whole lot more on what's called EEAT, which is essentially how much they can trust the content that's on your site. And that is influenced by a number of factors, but that includes in health topics, it's considered kind of a high risk topic for Google because it could really affect somebody's life if it's inaccurate. They place a heavy emphasis on the credentials of the authors. Are the author bios there? And are they healthcare professionals? So I think there will always be a place for that, but it does allow you to write things in, let's say, half the time. And prior to this, from what I've seen, the demand for medical writers has been far greater than the number of medical writers out there. And there are a lot of people wanting to get into it, but when I've had conversations with recruiting, the companies they're recruiting for, they want experience in a specific area. Or say, like, for example, they want, you know, somebody who's worked with publications in cardiology, or they want somebody, you know, done a specific type of document. That kind of thing is in really short supply. So right now, I don't personally see the market collapsing, at least for a while, with medical writing.
There was that attorney, this is like 3 months ago, that attorney turned in something to the judge. They cite cases and it had like 80% of the cases that were cited were fake. AI just made them up. They just do that. It doesn't come back and ever say, we don't know. It just makes stuff up. That adds weight to what you're saying about having to check it and so on.
And I will say that one of the huge weaknesses that I've seen consistent with multiple AI writers is citing in the medical world, it's citing specific studies. And it will just say a meta-analysis in JAMA said this and it had this many patients and that thing never existed.
Never was there. That's something, isn't it?
Yeah. And Bankrate, I was on a podcast with Peter Llewellyn, who's big in med comms. We talked about Bankrate for a while. Somebody mentioned that Bankrate has went heavily in AI. And they mentioned that there were some factual errors and Bankrate had to recall articles. And it looked, as far as I saw, it was centered around numbers. So it said the interest on $10,000 was $10,300 rather than $300. However, I would say that's as much of the fault as the editor as it, like anything else. It's a tool. Like in the pharmacy, we have the same thing. You got barcode scanning to the bottles, but you still got to take the pills out of the right bottle.
You really have to have someone that's going through it piece by piece to see if it's correct in that process.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you brought that up because it brings another huge point that I want to mention about these AI writers is that in order to even prompt the AI writer to produce the type of output you want, you have to have the knowledge that comes along with being a healthcare professional. Or there's a lot of life science PhDs who work in med comms too, but you have to have some level of knowledge. If I'm prompting it on diabetes, you can't just say write about diabetes and expect it to produce what you want. So if you start saying write about the pharmacotherapy for type 2 diabetes, cite only ADA guidelines, or let's say define diabetes according to AAC and ADA guidelines, discuss metformin, GLP-1s, and SGLT-2s, including their side effects, mechanism of action. Now you're getting a really good prompt, and it will give you that information. But you think like a layperson would be very unlikely to produce that kind of output. And so medical communication firms, I think, are still going to need people with a healthcare or life sciences background to communicate with the AI writers. And that's where I think there's going to be big job opportunities.
You're absolutely right. That is a huge part of it. I mean, just a quick example, like with my show here, I might tell AI to produce a social media, just a paragraph on the upcoming show. And it makes a big difference if I say, write this to pharmacists, this paragraph, or if I say, my show is based on conversation. It's more of a the late show you might see on TV, that kind of stuff. Makes a big difference what comes out of it. One's talking about the feelings and the conversation and the ups and downs and something like that, and something else is coming out with statistics, or you'll learn this if you do that. Well, it's not really a learning thing, and so much of it is really what you put into it. All of it is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. That's the name of the game. There are a variety of other writing tools, an instant article writer, which can be useful in limited consumer health. It's where you basically plug in the headers and it produces the articles. I would not foresee being able to produce like a CE with that chat writer. And I actually have this, they can go to my YouTube channel, but I have a demo where I actually made a chat writer produce a CE program. And it was actually, the subject was diabetes. And the chat writer even created a table. They created a table of major drug classes for diabetes, their side effects, and I think the effect on weight. There's some kind of prompt I used it as an example like that, and it spit it out.
And for our listeners that haven't dabbled in this much, I think what Alex and I are getting at is, so ChatGPT or whoever, the different ones, you can take a prompt and say as simple as write an article about diabetes. And if that's all your input you have, it doesn't come out with a partial article. It comes out with a full article, the beginning, the middle, the end. It looks like something you're going to read in a magazine. But it may have no depth, or it might have a lot of depth, but it's the wrong depth that you need. You weren't going after that. But it's not like it warns you that this was a half-ass article. It looks like a nice big article, but it might be down the wrong path.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It also could be geared towards the wrong audience. If you're writing for healthcare professionals, that's going to be a different writing style than writing for consumers. You think about, and like the CE that I got it to produce, the prompt is like a page and a half long. I typed it up on a Word document first, and it's a page and a half long. And then you put it in the chat writer in sections. I had to put it in three sections because it exceeded the character limit for the input. But still, you have to know what a CE looks like. You have to know what you want to ask with diabetes. You have to know what pharmacist would want to know about diabetes if you're producing a CE. And this one was a sample. It wasn't like a CE, you know, that's you can go out and see completed with a CE company. This one was just kind of to demonstrate the writers. But you have to have that baseline level of knowledge, or I just don't think you would be able to do it. To your point in mechanical engineering, or I'm writing a piece on aviation, and some new technology with the Boeing or something. I have no business writing about that.
You have to know your audience because, for example, on this show, I might have a guest on and they might be explaining for a few minutes and maybe they would go longer on, you know, what the PBMs are or what something is. And I always edit that stuff out or redirect the conversation because your listeners are going to fall off after listening for a minute if you're hitting the basics of those things. Same with the writing. If you come in too high or too low for somebody, you're missing that target and you're going to drop off.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an excellent point. Exactly. A physician, you're writing a C for a physician. You know, don't drone on about what diabetes is or something. Yeah, you got to start getting to the point.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
One of my sons just graduated. He's a secondary education. He's an English teacher at a high school, freshman, sophomore English teacher. That was interesting telling him about ChatGPT because that's like his, you know, it'd almost be like me thinking how somebody else might respond in the medical writing who wasn't forward thinking. And he's like, I'm not going to let this thing help me out. But thankfully, they had an in-service kind of thing where they said, here's what you should use it for and things like that. And I told my son, I said, I think that's great. It'd kind of be like maybe a pharmacist instead of physically cliche, instead of counting out the tablets, it gives them time to work with the patient. And I said that to my son. Instead of you making out quizzes or having to decide this and that, let ChatGPT do it. And then you spend your time comparing it to pharmacy with the patient, basically who's your student. And they need the personal attention and the looking into their work as human to human, that kind of stuff. But let the AI do all the other stuff.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. In the pharmacy world, it's just, I mean, we have filling robots. Just they're too expensive unless you reach a certain volume at a pharmacy. So it's always a business decision. But if a filling robot was $500 and didn't take any maintenance, everybody would have. I mean, in ChatGPT, the technology is cheap. There are free trials of a lot of them. I use one that I get way more words than I ever use in a month. It's GPT-4, 4.5 technology is the latest technology. And it's $130 a year or something like that. I mean, it's just extremely inexpensive and you can use it for medical. You can use it for other niches too.
I know that in ChatGPT just a week or two ago, they opened up, they're allowing documents. And finally, I was able to upload 10, 15 pages. But when I was trying to do stuff for the podcast here with the transcript and that, it's the same thing you're talking about. You had to take 10 pages and then summarize them and then combine it and all that kind of crap.
Yeah. And actually, the tool that I use has another, there's a kind of another style of AI writing tools that I call user-trained AI writers. And I use WriteSonic as the name of the company that everyone called BotSonic. And essentially what you do is you feed it PDF documents and links and stuff like that. It digests them. And then you can start asking it questions about the documents. For a brief time, I worked on an NPJE, a review course, and it was great for that. So I took BotSonic. I fed it all of the South Carolina state laws. And then I started asking it questions that helped me find things. I still had to write the question, but what it did was it kept me from having to sort through all those laws. So it was a controlled substance prescription good for in South Carolina. It'll give me the answer, but it also tell me where it is in that huge stack of papers. Just kind of go right to it.
In my neighborhood, we have about 20 houses and we're part of they call it a site condo. We don't have identical houses and nobody does our yard and that kind of stuff. It's just that the city doesn't pay for our road, so we have to combine our funds and fees and pay for our road and stuff like that. Anyways, we're attached to another homeowners association down the road. And there are a bunch of old farts who they're all retired, but they're trying to relive their attorney days, you know, and that kind of stuff. So something minor comes up and they're like threatening to sue us on stuff. And so I'm the president of our association and we had some tiny issue. But like I say, they all pull out their quill pens and stuff and they want to get into it. I took their emails back and forth, and I took some emails that part of our board sent and all that. I just loaded them all up into, I think it was Anthropic, but one of the AI engines. And I loaded it all up and I said, and I just didn't say, what should I do? But basically I said, calm this down, make it politically correct and hear from both sides. But ultimately, here's what I want to say. And I threw it in there, came out with this lovely letter. I would have spent days on that before, not making it for days, but reading it, see if it was the right tone, all that kind of stuff. And it saved me a lot of angst. You also know that you're not too far off the deep end. In other words, that's what they say about marriage. It's like, usually in a marriage, both people are kind of crazy, but two people make up one sane person. So it's like with this thing, it's like, I might be in a pissy mood or something, and I might be offensive and all that. But if I throw it into one of these AI things, it kind of calms me down. It gives me trust in my response.
Yeah. And that's an excellent use case, because it's just the kind of thing where it would excel at is writing in an empathetic tone. A famous study found that patients thought that ChatGPT was more empathetic than a human doctor with their responses. I'm sure you probably at least read through the letter carefully. It's very likely you edited section work. What's the complaint about that? Like,
I've got this app I use for the pharmacy, and it's a relatively new app. And so my input to this company, I don't know where the hell they are, but my input to them, they seem to respond pretty well. And sometimes you can see the program even tweak a little bit when you're a relatively new company. But every time I send them something, it used to be, hey, Monica, here's the issue. Thanks, Mike. We'll check it out. Now, Monica, and I say that in quotes because it's Monica's AI. Dear Mike, we hope all is well with you, and we can't thank you enough for bringing this to our attention. And we understand that this and this and this is going on, and we feel your pain, that this would be a lot of, you know, all this stuff. So it's giving me all this AI baloney. So whenever I got to find something on that, now I either got to drop down to the third paragraph so I can get past all the politeness of the AI.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that. I just yesterday recorded a brand new CE that's going to be coming out with the Chief CE on AI and medical writing. The live webinar, the first portion is recorded, and then you have the 10-minute Q&A. And for the recording, for the slides, I went to this plastic surgery clinic where they had a user-trained AI writer. I mean, the thing's just like, they fed it probably their policies and their prices and all this stuff. And then you can ask it questions as an example. And I told the thing, like, I'm interested in getting the wrinkles around my armpits tucked. And it responds, like, what would it mean to you if you got those wrinkles tucked?
Hey, that's none of your damn business. I just want my wrinkles.
Yeah, I went on and I told it I could get my deodorant on so I don't stink. And it said, please tell me more. it's like trying to be a therapist there on the customer service chat box.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows you're talking to a robot.
Exactly. There was something, where did I hear that on last week? I forget what it was, but this guy was talking to someone at the company at the help desk. He would say something and this robot would kind of laugh, making it sound like a human's laugh. And then he would say something else. And pretty soon he said to her, he said, is this a human? And she said something like, we wouldn't want it any other way, or some like vague answer, something like that. And then he came out and he said, tell me you're not a robot. And she kept beating around the bush. So apparently that was one thing programmed into it, that it'll never admit it's a robot. But then no. It was just funny how often he went back to ask if it was a robot.
Well, that robot's ready to run for Congress.
Yeah, exactly. Alex, do you see, besides the stuff we were talking about, that side of it, if done correctly, do you only see benefits to the consumers of this stuff? I mean, we talked about some of the things you have to be careful for, but do you think, well, here's an example. Before, when you maybe had some people, let's say, tweeting some thoughts, now it gives someone the ability to be a thespian and write out these long blogs. And pretty soon you've got like blogs all over the place, which used to be 140 character tweets or something like that. Do you see anything bad coming from this as far as info overload? And I know we already talked about things that are wrong and stuff like that. Do you see the consumer getting hurt as the receiving end of this?
I definitely see that's possible. The main thing that I see, at least with website, at some point probably narrow the focus to some extent because there's so many AI tools out there. But with the writers and the websites, it's become easier than ever to start a website and produce just boatloads of content really quickly. And their case studies even this year, actually, I listened to Niche Pursuits podcast, which is a pretty popular podcast for people who work on websites and things of that nature. And they actually just had a case study from somebody who grew a website from zero to $15,000 a month and started it January of this year. Now, that individual did edit all of the AI articles, so they were really focused on quality. But I've seen other cases where they're just right on it, for example. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. They have the tool available. Again, it's up to you to use it, but they have a one-click publish button and it integrates with your WordPress account, which for those unfamiliar is a website, the most popular website builder. It integrates with your WordPress account and you can click a button from WriteSonic and you could publish it directly to your WordPress account without even going into WordPress. You could do some light editing within WriteSonic. You could also just hit publish. The one that the individual who's now making $15,000 a month said he used was Koala Writer. And with that one, you can schedule topics. You can pull in like search queries on an Excel spreadsheet. For example, best hotels in Austin, Texas would be a search query. And then if you have people competing over that search term, so you enter just bunches of search queries, it'll write articles and publish them automatically to your blog. So you could just, you buy the membership, you could just have it just cranking out raw content. The name of the game is like writing bigger and better than the next guy so that you rank on Google, you rank top on Google, and then you get all the traffic. So they could take those search queries, they could go into like a popular search engine, like the tools you use to check those search queries, they could find the topics they want, they could upload them in an Excel spreadsheet to Koala Writer. I'm just using that as an example. I'm sure there's plenty others out there that could do it. And with a paid membership with Koala Writer, you could have it just basically write content while you sleep and it just publishes it automatically to your WordPress account and you've never even seen the article. That is possible. And earlier this year, I think Google has gone more and more heavy with updates on cracking down on it and is going to continue to crack down on it. But just raw, unedited AI content that's not checked at all and just producing like 300 of them a month or something. They were ranking in Google. They were getting tons of traffic. They were making money. But it was, I don't even say it's garbage because I've seen what the AI writers can do, but you don't know that it's accurate. You're writing about best printers for something, you know, best. I was going to mention The Verge. They got a lot of attention recently, an article really, I'm talking about how people who work in these websites have ruined the internet. Very soon afterwards, somebody surfaced an article from The Verge. If you search best printers for 2023, they rank on the first page of Google for an article on that. And they unabashedly say it's written by ChatGPT. And it's just total garbage. So I don't know if they did it as a case point to show that they could rank because of how authoritative their website is. But it was total trash, and it just said something like, hey, man, buy this Brother printer. And then it's just jargon. Like, it had to have been an old version of ChatGPT, because it's like worse than what these AI writers can even produce today. And it's going to become even more important to have content reviewers, I think, in all niches. But no matter what niche your website is in, to have people who really have experience in it, to have their name on it, to have their picture on the website, to have their bio, like these kind of things that build reader trust are going to become more and more important. And Google did a huge reshuffle actually just a few weeks ago and started ranking forums really highly when they weren't ranking before. So like you type in best hotels in Austin or whatever, a lot of search queries like that, you'd start getting Reddit as ranking as number one. now, and that's a huge change from the past. Now, Google may dial that back in future updates, but I think what they're trying to get at is that with Reddit as an example, I'm not saying it's a gold standard, but people are getting paid to produce the content. They're writing it out of, it's like the creative, it's like a commons. So they're giving like recommendations that they truly feel they like, that they would recommend to a friend. I mean, there's no motivation to spam Reddit. There's no financial motivation.
On Reddit, you could easily copy the text on that page of the first of the answer to the first 30 responses, throw it into ChatGPT, come out with a AI answer. But that would still be for personal involvement, because like you say, is there not a financial involvement in that? So at least why would you have AI so involved if there's not going to be remuneration for it?
Yeah, exactly. And then you'd have a lot of other folks in the forum say, hey, the hotel sucks, don't go there, or whatever. Like if the hotel's in Austin example, you'd have a lot of people on a Reddit forum kind of pushing back and saying, why are you recommending such an awful hotel? You'd have disagreements over the best ones, as you always would, but a truly bad one would get kind of weeded out in the forums. So yeah, Google has started ranking that more. They've kind of taken health and finance are two topics they've kind of taken separately. They call it your money, your life. They're kind of nicknamed for it. Topics where inaccurate information could really hurt you. And those topics have become extremely hard to rank for. So yeah, if you Google best medications for heart failure, you shouldn't, I mean, I haven't Googled it, but you should not get a Reddit. Yep. I don't think you're going to get Reddit as number one. You're going to get like Mayo Clinic, Harvard Health, things of that nature.
The medical one will kind of use some name brand medical ones to kind of fight AI.
Yes, they will. With name brand being like how trusted their website is, and then also authors, so that how trustworthy the authors are. Are they doctors talking about heart failure? Do you have any bios of the authors at all? Things of that nature. It's similar. I think YouTube now has a verified healthcare professional or something like that for YouTube, and they can submit their license and then get that to set themselves apart. So Google is ranking things like that.
We've been talking about writing, but I saw online someone had put up at least an audio of Joe Rogan about an hour podcast with an imaginary guest.
Whoa.
I don't think it was good. You could tell it wasn't quite there as far as interaction, humor, empathy, that kind of thing. But I always think about like with all of the commodities in the world, and people say that drugs are a commodity, and you can even go as far as say with AI that medical stuff can be a commodity, and all kinds of commodity, and even animation and art and movies and all that kind of stuff. And I'm trying to think if I can gain attention of the market from something that can't be duplicated. I don't know what the hell I would do with it, but it's just an interesting thing to me. You start thinking about all the stuff that can be duplicated, even like actors now. Marlon Brando's family can sell his likeness, and there'd probably be a movie in 3 years with him as the main actor. So it's just interesting of things that can be duplicated in my mind to think what can't be duplicated. And that's kind of the stuff that I would focus on.
I feel like that's going to become harder and harder. You know, the images now, images of the deep fakes, we've gotten to the point where even images are going to have pedigree. It's like it's a Monet or something like that, but it's just a snapshot. I certainly worry about disinformation and social instability due to that, not just within the US, but I mean globally, from being able to produce mass. Like you could create, I could go right now and buy a domain on GoDaddy, and I could produce massive amounts of AI. I could have it pull in feeds from other kind of channels that would be disinformation. I could automatically pulling in news stories. I could create deep fake images and make up stuff. And it'd almost be like The Onion, right? Except it'd be scary.
And think about it, Alex. Anything can be fake, because you'd have the current president saying something fake, deep fake. And then you say, yeah, but I'm only going to watch that on NBC News Tonight. It's like, really? How often do you sit down and watch TV? You might get it off a video with, I don't know, Diane Sawyer. I know Barbara Walters has passed away. I think Diane Sawyer is still alive. But I can watch a video with one of the popular newscasters, but of course that can be faked. And then you'd say, yeah, but it came from ABC News. No, it didn't. That was faked.
Yeah.
Maybe if the only thing I looked at was things that I knew the feed was from somewhere, or if I turned on my TV at 6:30 at night and I know I'm watching one of the main newscasts, but I don't even have a TV service. I mean, that's how little people are watching things that they know where it's from.
Yeah, I agree. And I think like a lot of people are consuming nearly solely from social media. I've seen surveys on in the past. I forget, I don't know, 1 in 4 or something are getting all of news to kind of go down that route from social media. And of course, you can't verify something on social media. I mean, some social media platforms are better than others, but even if it's only to cover their own butt, they all attempt to like moderate to some extent, as far as I know of. But by then, it's got to go up before it can be taken down. And by then, people have seen it. They could record, they could share it, they could record it for themselves, you know, save it on their own computer. So I agree that the information side of things is going to be one of the threats, potentially, with AI.
Alex, you do this, but I also know you teach this. And it's interesting to hear that you say there's so much more writing available than there are writers.
That's been my impression of the situation for quite a while. A really tough thing is just getting into writing, because you've got the healthcare professional background, but little to no writing experience within the medical writing world. It's tough when you first get started. If I wanted to do a new kind of writing, like a kind of writing I just have no experience in, I would face the same thing. Like most of my stuff has been web articles, CE. I've done a little bit of pharma and a few things here and there. Let's say regulatory writing is something I've never done. That's submitting documents to the FDA or any other regulatory agencies. I'd have to put in a lot of applications. But at the same time, they're desperate for regulatory writers, but they need somebody who can do the job. I think with AI, the prompt engineering, people who can effectively prompt, is going to be a huge need. And I don't think the demand is going to be met for a while.
I imagine with your writing, well, you tell me, I would imagine that your name is out there. So some people might come to you because of that. And also, if you go to someone, you've got examples of who you wrote for, and all that gives you credence.
Yeah, I've had both happen. So I do have a portfolio where I can link out to articles and things that I've read. I've been able to show to companies that I have been able to get work. And then I've had companies kind of reach out to me later. Sometimes it's the mass LinkedIn mail, sales navigator mails or whatever. And then other times it's actually been opportunities that have worked out.
Well, Alex, take me through the class as to what has significantly changed since AI came out? Because I know you've had this program before. Is this piggybacking, or is it basically a revamped program because so much has changed and now it is AI focused?
Yeah, so the previous course is still up and it's still available through Udemy. And that's focused really on breaking into the medical writing field. I did add a couple sample lectures from AI. I have some things on just the general writing process, mostly focused on finding work. Where do you even find ads for medical writing jobs? And then on getting the work, pitching editors, things of that nature, building a portfolio. It's really focused on moving from healthcare professional or life scientist into the medical writing field. So this new course is focused specifically on the AI aspect of medical writing. And within the course, of course, cover the basics, some headers and intros and conclusions and things of that nature, but then dig a lot into doing use cases. So we write like clinical trial summaries, we write continuing education, we write web articles for both consumers and providers. I get into a little bit of medical editing because I also do some of that, and get into a little bit of how you could possibly use AI for medical editing. We also look at it for how to use it to find a job. So I have a YouTube video. I put it up as a sample video on my YouTube channel to help you find medical writing work. So I just ask the prompt, like, find me 15 companies producing continuing education for pharmacists, or find me 10 medical communications companies that hire in the U.S., something like that, and it'll just kick them out. And then you can go to their websites and see what kind of jobs they currently have available. So we do a variety of things like that, using it to help you write a cover letter. It's all focused on AI. It's taught nearly 100% from my computer screen. So that way you can see exactly what's going into the all of the input, whether it's into the chat writer, article writer, what you can see exactly what I'm doing to produce that.
Is your face on this at all, or just the screen?
Yeah, and unfortunately not on the screen.
No. So you're showing the screen, and then you're showing yourself talking sometime.
Yeah. And then I've also got some downloadable resources where, like, after the lecture, I think I mentioned the prompt is for the continuing education I use is a page and a half. So that's a downloadable thing. It's on a Word document. They can check it out. And that can be a template to be used. If you're doing a CE for heart failure, you could still use that as a template to get your ideas going for how to produce a good prompt for a heart failure CE.
For your students, let's say, what's going to separate failure from success with this? And I guess that's however you define it. Some people might define success as how much income is it producing, or how much attention is it getting, whatever. But what's going to separate those two, Alex? Is it your salesmanship to sell yourself? Is it your skill? Is it your tenacity? Is it follow-up and resells? What separates success from lack of success?
For breaking into medical writing, I honestly think that the biggest thing is the people who just keep going. When I first got into it, it was by accident. I was just doing it as a hobby. I got lucky with the pitch to Drug Topics, and they took it. And I was just making $200 a month or something like that. But then when I moved from wanting to do that to wanting to make money that could potentially replace some of the pharmacist income, at that point, it's just sticking with it, like just putting in application after application and never hearing anything back, and getting interviewed and never hearing anything back. And eventually you start hearing, at least I'd started hearing some yeses from some people, and then you just do the best work you possibly can, and you follow up with them to see if they want more work so you can get more work out of the same company, and slowly it starts getting better. But that first stage for me was really only 6 months between when I decided to do it and when I was able to go part-time, move into a part-time role as a pharmacist. I don't know how many hundreds of applications and emails and things I sent during that time.
I always tell my kids, until someone's heard from you 3 times, you haven't really done what you need to do. And I use the example of the pharmacy. It's like when I used to get applications in from, let's say I put a college job out for an afternoon clerk, point of sale, whatever. And I'd get, this is back in the day when kids still wanted to work. Now nobody wants to work. But this is back in the day when kids still work, pre-COVID. And I'd get 10, 12 applications in, and I wouldn't do anything with them because I was overwhelmed with what came into me, number one. And number two is I thought, I want somebody who wants this job. I want somebody who is not just clicking the button for all these jobs. So that's number two. And then number three was, I want somebody who has tenacity, who has the push, that kind of thing. So part of it was my laziness and not knowing which way to turn, but part of it is that third connection, they kind of rise to the top. And so I imagine in your stuff too, that I know these guys probably could get sick of it, but they might be getting hundreds of these things in. And think about if somebody does it a second time, like says, hey, I sent this in on your application, but I wanted to send you a little note on LinkedIn too, blah, blah, blah. And then follow up a week later. I have no idea, but I imagine that's pretty huge.
Yeah, I would imagine with many recruiters or folks in the hiring field in large companies, I imagine that would work well.
Would that be good advice for someone trying to get something published and so on? Or would you just be being a pain in the ass to the editor doing that?
I think if you're applied to a career, like a full-time medical writing job, that would work. But the other way to kind of get in with medical writing is you either go kind of the careers page where they're actually looking for somebody and you hire and things of that nature. The other path is going the kind of guest posting and contributor page where you know they hire, you know that they bring people to write guest articles on, and you're not really an employee, they're paying per article. And you get in that way. And at that point, you think if you pitch the editor, most editors say they like a follow-up after about a week or so because they get inundated with pitches. So even there, I think following up, probably after one time, if you still don't hear back at that point, you should probably move on to a different journal or something, different website. But I think for the pitching, that makes sense. Even the pitching, if you're going to pitch an article, you may still have to pitch it to a few places in order to kind of find somewhere that's willing to work with you if you don't have any experience. And I think when you don't have experience with writing, then a really great place to focus is on your specialty. Hey, I'm a community pharmacist. I'm interested in pharmacy services, and I want to write a piece on pharmacogenomics in the community pharmacy, something like that. You're really focusing on that. Or I work in oncology and I don't have medical writing experience, but I'm board certified in oncology. I've been doing it for 5 years and, you know, I work at Mayo or something. And then actually that website is building the trust because they put your bio up, benefits you. You get something for your portfolio to show people, and they build the trust with the search engines and with, of course, with readers, which is equally important.
My daughter's boyfriend, he quit his teaching job and he is a sports article writer of current, not reporting, but current things that are happening. You know, the Olympics are coming out, girls volleyball, men's basketball, that kind of thing. And then their website, they will advertise sports betting companies on the website. And so the purpose of his articles, just basically SEO for them. And then they make money by people clicking on this. So a writer might, I'm just guessing this, a writer might say, who wants to know this? It's not necessarily new. It's not groundbreaking. It's not research. But there's a lot of reasons in this whole cycle, this whole business of this, that they need this stuff for, I imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that. And in the consumer health world, it could just be Googling things like whatever is going on with you or side effects of a drug, what to expect when taking a medication. All of that stuff is publicly available information. It's been written on before, but they're competing for that traffic. And the thing to keep in mind is this is not journalism. It's a different kind of writing. We're not writing for the Atlantic where we're doing deep undercover stories and whatnot. Like really.
Yeah, right.
Just, we're not uncovering the Watergate scandal here. We're just writing about the side effects of Paxil.
And sometimes maybe the information's not new, but you're relating it to something that is kind of new. The Winter Olympics are here again, and here's a reminder of this or that. You're just kind of tying it into some stuff. It's just new, and even if not newsworthy, it's at least eye candy worthy.
You're like trip advisors and things like that. They're going to be writing about where to go, where to stay this Christmas holiday season to see the lights, or, you know, where to see Santa in Tennessee or something like that. And all of those topics are being pulled from these keyword research tools. And in the health niche, it's the same thing. Like I write for it's public information, but I write for GoodRx and they have a whole SEO department and they're pulling these topics from wherever they pull them. They've got their tools they subscribe to. And they hand the topics and they have outlines and your job is to fill it out.
And it's tempting. I'll wake up in the morning and before I'm going to go for a walk, I'll sit there with coffee and I'll flip through my phone. Not the news, but maybe I'm on a Pixel and you go to the left and it gives you news, but more personal advice, news, categories you like and so on. And sure enough, I'll pull one up and it'll say 8 ways to do this. And I find myself opening them up. It's like, what the hell are they going to tell me that I haven't been through a million times already? But it's just clickbait sort of. You just have to see, like, have I nailed all 8 of those, or am I going to find one thing new? And you don't. And I could even write the damn article myself. I could go and type it into OpenAI and say 8 ways to make me whatever. But you got to see what people are saying. Everything's new, and you got to see if there's something out there to improve you and so on.
Yeah, and listicles perform really well for that reason. And oddly enough, it's really funny, but actually odd-numbered listicles have a higher click-through rate than even-numbered listicles. So 7 things to do this winter is going to get clicked on more than 8 things to do this winter, and nobody knows why. So websites tend to have more odd numbers. So the formula is an odd number plus the search term, plus, depending on the topic, the year, so that way you can validate that it's up to date. So 7 best hotels. A superlative is after the odd word. So 7 best, 7 top, 7 great, 7 top hotels to stay in Austin, Texas for 2023. It's a formula. You can go on to, like, your favorite website now that has clickbait, and you have 2 formulas to eat barbecue in North Carolina.
Right. Of course, I'm going to have to put this on our show now, too. I just can't say, here's a talk with Alex. I got to say, it's the 5 ways to do this or something. Yeah. That odd one is interesting. It's like the odd one out. I know 6 or 8 or 4 of them, but it's that odd one that I think is going to be my ticket to success.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know why, but people like odd numbers.
So, Alex, what's the best way? We'll put a link in here. But what are people interested in this going to do? They're going to click on your link and see these courses and just kind of think if they might want to dip their feet into this and click on some of your stuff.
Yeah, I'd also like to include a link to the free ebook I have that has the 3 top tips for getting started with AI writers.
Yeah, yeah.
Just go in there, enter your email, I'll send you the ebook, and it's got a lot of, like, raw outputs, examples of how to get started with refining the prompts. You can get better output than typing in what is heart failure. And got a list of AI writers in that book, 8 or 10 of them, so you can see some different examples. Sign up for some free trials and start playing around with it. I think that's one of the best ways to learn.
Alex, boy. Thank you for joining us all the way from Japan, and I hope your day goes well. Now you get some breakfast for yourself. But the attitude's cool, and it's the same attitude that we need as pharmacists. Until cancer is solved and until everybody lives to be 100, there's a need out there for people. You have to find the need and not be afraid of what's happening with AI. Use the tools that are there, and until everything's been solved, until that's happened, use the tools and let's all take a step up. I think it's a great attitude you have, and I know it's true, but also it's a great thing to hear.
Thank you. Enjoyed being on the show. And like I said, the most important thing with the AI is to just get started. The skills, if you're interested in medical writing, I absolutely think that learning to work with the AI writers is going to be the future. So yeah, take it as an opportunity.
All right, Alex, nice talking to you. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.